Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
All right, after just a little bit of discussion in the pre-show, we decided that this is the Wednesday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack. With me is Dan the Man. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, since it is Wednesday, there was a new blog that popped up over there this morning, so swing on by and check it out. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you're going to want to hit that link and get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, Dan and I are on Twitter as well. I am at Burke Time, and Dan the Man is at?
Dan the Man. There's only three E's.
And one Z. Oh, okay. That was yesterday. Sorry. Yeah. Obviously, Dan, there's, you know, the different sports are trying to come up with different ways to keep their fans, you know, intrigued, interested, whatever you want to look at it as. But I have to ask you, because, right off the bat, I'll tell you, I would have absolutely no interest in this one, but would you watch an NBA horse competition?
You know, I did see something about that, and you know, I mean, this kind of sounds like an all-star game kind of thing. That would make it a little bit more exciting, make the all-star game a little bit more exciting. But, I mean, the NBA really doesn't have anything, so, you know, we already see the dunk contest at the All-Star and the three-point. So, I mean, this is actually kind of cool. Obviously, I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, this would be the closest thing you can get to the home run derby that you and I discuss, not the All-Star home run derby. I think that, in that essence, it would be cool because, you know, what they could do is, you know, you could even forego using production because, I mean, let's be honest, these NBAers probably have, you know, the latest, greatest phone, much better, you know, not to say that anyone else can't have it, but I'm sure they've got the latest phone. And the quality on these phones these days, I mean, they could just have their wife or their kid, you know, record them. And, I mean, if they kind of go this route, which is what I was thinking when I saw it, was, you know, not KD, because I don't think he can walk yet, but, you know, Steph Curry, maybe he gets a bunch of guys that don't have the same skill set. You know, Steph Curry, maybe Steph, maybe LeBron, you know, guys who are known for dunking, you know, Zach LaVine, you know, kind of those guys up against each other, and then, you know, NBA Productions can either stream it live or, you know, they can edit it so that, you know, we get LeBron at his house in his backyard or wherever he is, you know, with one of his kids, with Bronny. I hate that name. Sorry. No knock. I'm not going to knock the kid at all. This is a nickname because it's funny. I don't know what it reminds me of. I think of Bounty or, you know, whatever. You know, but if you have LeBron at his house doing his thing, you know, and then Steph at his house, Zach LaVine and his, you know, that might be pretty cool, but I think that would be something more for the kids though, wouldn't it? I don't think it would be, you know, you and I might turn it on if there's nothing else on, but, you know, the minute the commercial comes on, seeing what else is on, and I might not turn back to that.
Yeah, well, they have three players that are already committed to it. Trey Young, Chris Paul, and you mentioned Zach LaVine. They're committed to play. Apparently, they're going to get some WNBA players and actually some retired NBA players involved. Apparently one of the problems here is, like they mentioned Giannis Antetokounmpo in this article, the problem is he doesn't have a hoop that is accessible at his house, which I find kind of strange for an NBA player. I think they would all have them, but apparently Antetokounmpo does not have one, so he won't be participating. But yeah, the plan is, as it says right now, is for, it's going to be shown on the Mickey Mouse Network. No surprise, they're desperate for programming. But they haven't decided yet if it's going to be live or it's going to be pre-recorded. Dan, I got to guess you're going to pre-record this thing, right? Otherwise, there's just going to be a boatload of downtime, and nobody's going to want to watch that.
You cannot do this live. I mean, granted, I'm assuming Antetokounmpo lives in Milwaukee right now. I'm assuming he's not overseas in Greece. So you have the option to do it live. But, I mean, if you're going to do it live, I mean, you can't. You've got this isn't something you could put together as quickly as you, you know, oddly, I think you could put together pre-recorded quicker than you would live, because if you think about it, you got three guys that you just confirmed, and let's just say they add another four, five, six more, which honestly, I think incorporating the WNBA is awesome. You know, to get these women involved in it too, kind of get their exposure out there. I think that's great, you know, and some retired guys. I'm just glad, you know, I think maybe they should get Kevin Hart too, because it would just be funny to have Kevin Hart. Nobody else, just Kevin Hart. But, you know, if you think about it, let's just say you have nine guys and girls, and you want to do it live, I mean, you have to really coordinate that, and it's almost to the point where you would need nine separate crews going out to each individual houses, you know, because they got to be on top of it. You got to have a producer there. You got to have the cameraman. You've got to have, you know, the assistant that just says, we're on. You know, so I think to do it live, that would be cool if we had, you know, we weren't under restrictions, but to do it live, I think is a little much. I think they'd be better off pre-recording it. And so you can kill the downtime, because like you said, there would be a lot of downtime.
Yeah, I mean, that would just be, you know, I mean, I guess in reality, the Mickey Mouse Network would get what they want. It would fill quite a bit of time, because obviously there's going to be a lot of guys walking around and a lot of talking, you know, and just a lot of BS that I'm not going to want to watch. You know, this way at least they could get it on tape and edit it so it would fit into the time frame a little better. You know, maybe you get to the point where the finals could be done live, because then you would be only be getting two players together instead of trying to get a group of players together. And obviously you could keep them the proper distance apart to be safe with a film crew. You know, that could definitely be something you could possibly do. But, yeah, to start off now and try to do this live is just, yeah, I think this is ridiculous. And then, of course, the second thing, there can't be any dunking in this. It actually has to be a shooting competition. You know, otherwise it's just going to, basically it's going to turn into the dunk contest, and we've already got one of those.
Yeah.
You know, and I actually forgot that the NBA did this, and I'm going to guess you did too. I did not watch a minute of this, Dan, but apparently I think it's actually still going on. They're doing an NBA 2K20 players tournament. And LaVine happened to be in that. He got beat in the first round. I believe the Mickey Mouse Network showed that as well, and I never even bothered to turn it on. Did you know about this or turn it on or watch it? Have you recorded the whole thing to watch later?
I didn't even know it was on, to be honest.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I was. I was like, oh, wait, there's a, you know. I remember seeing it, and I remember seeing, like, some of the brackets, because I believe I saw that, like, DeMarcus Cousins was in it. And I remember there was kind of a, I believe it was Kevin Durant was the number one seed, and he got beat in the first round. And I remember somebody mentioning, I think I saw it in an article, that he was upset that he lost or something like that. And I was just like, well, okay, I guess that happens. But, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I guess at least they're trying, right? Again, you know, it we're back to this point where we're going to watch people play a video game. Don't they do that on, like, Twitch? Or Twitch is it, right? The other streaming thing? Don't they do that on that service?
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is what's going to date you and I. And, I don't get it, but you know, for me growing up as a kid, because we all do, because we all grew up as a kid, you know, it would have been awesome to have YouTube when I was playing. You know, granted, our games weren't as complicated, you know, Mario Brothers or the likes of that. It would have been cool because, you know, people would post, you know, how to move on to the next level or, you know, things like that. The cheat codes and all that crap. But, you know, today there's people that make, you know, that ninja guy kid, you know, he's got sponsors. You know, he's been in commercials.
Yeah.
He makes tons of money for playing a game. And, you know, my nephews, I don't know about the older one anymore, but I know the younger one, he still watches his YouTube videos that are strictly gamers, you know, channels, which I'm like, why don't you just play the game?
Yeah, I've always kind of wondered that, you know, I know, you know, like I used to work with a kid who was a, I think it was Call of Duty was his game. And he used to post videos on YouTube, and it was just kind of like, I didn't really get it, so, but, you know, he liked doing it and had a good time doing it, and I hope that's not too loud in the background, but I'm getting a severe thunderstorm warning from the National Weather Service in the other room, so.
Oh, I was wondering what that was. No, you know, I believe it was actually PlayStation 3 that started that. Where you could post your video of the game you're playing, I think live, or I don't really know how that works because I haven't had a PlayStation since, I don't know, first one or PS2. So, but I know I've seen some people post their videos like, hey, check this game out. It's pretty cool. You know, I mean, for me, if I was playing the game and I had the ability to post and I was good at it, I think I would be posting videos all day or streaming all day because, I mean, the way the world works now, you get enough followers, you're going to make money.
Yeah, I probably would be doing the same thing if, you know, that was my thing. I don't play, you know, the first-person shooter games like that or, you know, those kind of things. I just don't enjoy it.
They do that for every kind of different game. So, I mean, people, you know, whatever game you're into, there's going to be people who are into it, you know, and are going to watch it. You know, maybe if I had thought about it and had the setup and the systems, I could have started my own streaming channel for, you know, bad video game players. Let's see how bad he does today, you know.
So, yeah, and then, you know, the other NBA thing, and I'm kind of surprised that it took you and I this long to actually bring this up, but it actually looks like the Bulls are going to make some changes in their front office. You know, they've been interviewing. It looks like they're going to hire a new executive vice president of basketball operations, That means he would be replacing John Paxton. Or, you know, I did see Paxton is going to stay with the organization. He's going to move into an advisory role. And right now, everybody seems to think the front runner is, and I'm going to butcher this name, but it's Arturis Karnasovas, who is right now the general manager of the Denver Nuggets. You know, the Nuggets have really made a turnaround the last couple of years. So he, you know, he's been the lead. I know they've talked to some other guys. You know, they interviewed the Atlanta Hawks general manager, who is named Wes Wilcox. And there was a third name, and I'm drawing a blank, but I don't see it in the article here. You know, the interesting thing is what they haven't kind of mentioned is, you know, obviously Paxton is going to move into that advisory role. They haven't quite said what's going to happen with Gar Foreman, who's the Bulls' general manager right now. You would have to think he's probably out of a job because a new guy coming in is going to want to bring in his own guy. But you and I have mentioned it here before, not only when it comes to the Bulls, but with the White Sox, how loyal is Jerry Reinsdorf is to his guys. You think Foreman is gone, or do you think they find another role in the organization for him like Paxton?
I mean, obviously it's only one or two ways. He's gone and he's got the new role. I think he's gone. I mean, any point of making decisions, you know, that come to what's going on in the court, drafting, he and Pax need to be gone. You know, Pax can go sit in his advisory role until Jerry dies and then, you know, his paychecks are done. I don't know if that's the route. You know, maybe Gar could be, you know, Pax's advisor, you know, secretary advisor, whatever you want to call him. But I don't know. It's just, I can't wait for this era to be over.
Yeah, and, you know, in reality, now, you know, the Bulls president is Michael Reinsdorf, obviously Jerry's son. I would have to think he's probably got a lot to do with this because I doubt Jerry has much day-to-day involvement with the team as it is or anything like that. But, you know, people, you know, if you don't live in the Chicago area and you're just an NBA fan, you may not actually realize what a gigantic step this is for the Bulls, because this is just something that doesn't happen here. You know,
no.
Jerry gets his guys in and they stay in. I mean, I'm, you know, maybe I can find it here, but it seems like John Paxton has been the Bulls, you know, either general manager or, you know, basketball operations guy for, 15 years, 20 years or something like that. I mean, it just seems like he's been there an inordinate amount of time. And, you know, now we're, you know, and again, we're talking about a team here that isn't winning, but yet he's held on to his job. Yeah, it was April 2003 when he took over as the Bulls' general manager. So he's been in the organization 17 years. You know, imagine that. And it was 2009 when he moved up to VP of basketball operations. So he's been in that job for 11 seasons.
Well, and, you know, like you said, and for people that don't see the honesty, the loyalty, Paxton came in at the resignation of Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause is the, you know, the sixth ring guy. So, you know, and if I forget how long Krause, when did he start?
Oh, when did Krause come in? I'm sure I get here. He started with the Bulls in 1985.
Oh,
is when he took over as general manager.
So, I mean, you know, we obviously don't need to keep going back. But we've, God, for almost the last 40 years, there's been two guys, three technically. But, you know, let's be honest, I think PAX has a whole lot of say over what Gar does, even though Gar is supposed to be the GM.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure if you were to go and look back, I wouldn't be surprised to find that the Bulls are probably the only team who have had two guys in the front office for what would be 35 years. You know, I mean, that's what, you know, because, I mean, you think about front offices and the way things are run now. I mean, there are teams that seem to change guys almost every year or every other year. And we're talking basically three guys. You know, you throw Gar Foreman in there. You know, you got Krause, you got Pax, and you got Foreman for 35 years. And obviously, you know, Krause gets the success of the six championship rings with Jordan. But, you know, since 2003, what have the Bulls done to, you know, right. So, you know, I mean, you kind of look at that. I mean, they've had, you know, the number one pick a couple times. You know, I believe they took like Elton Brand with one pick, and you mentioned Derrick Rose. But let me see if I can find some records here. Where is 2003? Okay. They made, you know, they've made some, you know, they've made their fair share of playoffs. It looks like they went to the conference finals one time. That was back in 2010, 2011 with Tom Thibodeau as the coach, the year Rose won the MVP. But other than that, they haven't gotten out of the, well, they haven't gotten out of the second, yeah, they haven't gotten out of the second round since then. And yeah, it's just, you know, it's just not a good, you know, real kind of look here. I mean, it's a bad team that kind of kept a coach around for God only knows why. And then when it looked like they had a guy in Thibodeau, I mean, it's funny. You look at Thibodeau's records, Dan. He had 62, 50, 45, 48, and 50. They made the playoffs every year he was here. And he got canned.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I get that it's a players' league and the players hated him because he expected them to work hard and play defense. And those are two things that don't go in the NBA, especially the defense part. But, I mean, his results were, you know, you can't argue with that. But, you know, like I said, the players like them, so they shipped them off.
Well, and I think the funniest thing about the whole Thibodeau thing is he gets shipped off, which, I mean, to me is kind of unprecedented to see a manager or a coach get traded, which was just odd. Or did he get traded? Was that how that worked with Minnesota?
Well, he got canned. So.
Oh, that's right, he got canned. I guess, well, my next step was the players who got traded. The two most boisterous people on the Bulls, Derrick Rose and Jimmy Buckets. What's his last name now? Why can't I think of it? Jimmy what?
Jimmy Butler.
Oh, Jimmy Butler. I don't know why I blanked on it. So kind of the guys who our media made it seem like were having the biggest issues with Tibbs' coaching style and practice and all that, end up playing with him again in Minnesota, and we don't hear a single peep out of either men, allegedly, from any of the media that they don't like Tom Thibodeau. So, you know, I think it was one of those just giant scapegoats. I don't know where the crying was coming from, but I feel like it really wasn't coming from Jimmy and Derek, because why else would they even continue to, you know, if I didn't really like Tibbs that much, you're going to trade me to Minnesota, I'd be like, just, okay, trade me and drop me. you know, I think he could have got that deal, but he didn't. He stayed on to play with Tibbs. So, you know, it's so hard because this team is not only dysfunctional in the front office, but, you know, the whole end of Tibbs' career and in Chicago and Derek's post-injury alleged, you know, partial returns. You know, I mean, you don't know who the hell you're supposed to believe or listen to. Derek's brother, you know, the media.
Yeah, well, we don't listen to them. No.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, you can actually look at it as Thibodeau saved Derrick Rose's career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it looked like Rose was on the way out. You know, he went from the Bulls to the Knicks, and then he couldn't find a job. You know, he ended up playing 16 games with the Cavaliers. They got rid of him. The Timberwolves picked him up, and he played the final 9 games of the year with them in 2017, 2018. You know, then he bounced back the next year as kind of a six-man type of guy for the T-Wolves, and he ended up scoring 18 points a game, and that enabled him to get a big deal with the Pistons this offseason. You know, not a huge deal that the original Derrick Rose would have gotten, but a pretty decent deal for a guy in, you know, his spot. So, yeah, I mean, when you look at it, by getting back with Tibbs, I think is the big reason that Derrick Rose is still even a factor in the NBA at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you wonder how that worked out, because remember, they blamed Tibbs for ruining his career when he got hurt those couple years in a row.
Yeah, because he was working too hard.
Yeah. Yes, because he was working too hard and expected to play defense, and God forbid we play defense. So, yeah, it's just kind of, you know, it's kind of humorous when you point that out. That, you know, these guys allegedly hated Thibodeau and the way he ran the team, but yet when, you know, the guy needed a job, you know, Tibbs was right there to help him out and got him back. And, you know, now, you know, Thibodeau is out of the game. I believe he's an analyst for the Mickey Mouse Network. And, you know, Rose is hanging on, you know, going to get a couple more years out of a career that looked like it was over. So, yeah, I think that was kind of...
I didn't realize Tibbs was out of Minnesota. I do have the stupid side note, Big Jack. I know you won't agree with this, but when LeBron was able to get all his super friends, not all of them, but, you know, Derek, Dwayne Wade, and whoever else to join that team before they got all traded away, I was kind of secretly hoping that maybe they would all win together. Don't ask me why. I wasn't even a huge Derrick Rose fan, but the fact that they were all there, I was like, man, this would be like, not, I don't want to say a dream team, but it was pretty damn close to like a who's who of, you know, the NBA East at, you know, at that port, that time. And then they all got traded away, but, you know, I still think it would have been cool if you would have had, you know, you would have had all these big names on a team where even Dwayne Wade and Rose probably wouldn't have contributed, you know, combined 25 minutes a game. But it still would have been something cool to see.
Yeah, you know, it's always, I'll use the term interesting to kind of see how these guys all react together, because in some places it's really good and everybody gets along just fine, but the most part is it's a fiasco and a train wreck, and that's what we all want to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So... You know, but as we kind of expire the NBA topic, Dan, I want to kind of remind everybody that today in baseball history, Dan, Hank Aaron breaks Babe Ruth's record. You know, I want to say I kind of vividly remember this. If I'm correct, he hit the home run off of Al Downing, who was a left-handed pitcher for the Dodgers. Tom House was the Braves reliever who caught the ball in the bullpen, so I could just imagine trying to deal with a fan who would have caught the 715th home run for Hank Aaron. I don't know if I could have given that up if I was a fan. How about you?
Well, the Braves could have gave me season tickets, and I'd gladly give it up.
I think I would have needed, like, lifetime season tickets and, like, a box to sit in to get something like that up, you know?
No, you know, I kind of rectify that. I definitely wouldn't be able to attend all the games, and I wouldn't want to make money off of it just because, but I think
a box
a month every year, just one box.
Well, you know, like I would be happy if they gave me lifetime season tickets and I could sit in the owner's box. That, you know, that would be fine with me. You know,
just so I could
come watch the games, you know, if I lived in the Atlanta area or whatever. That's all, you know, and I don't know if that would be too much or if people think I'm an idiot for, you know, asking for something like that. But I think that would be something that I would want. Obviously, you know, you and I are huge baseball fans, so we would want to go to as many games as possible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but, yeah, and then, you know, like I wouldn't sell the tickets or anything like that. I would never, you know, do anything that would be looked at as, like, indignant or something like that after they were classy enough to help me out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I could, you know. Yeah, you know, like I said, fortunately the ball went into the bullpen and they didn't have to deal with that. But, yeah, so definitely a even though we don't have baseball as of right now, it's still a historic day in baseball. So there you go. And do you remember seeing that? Were you coherent enough at the time to remember that happening? Were you born then?
What year was that?
Oh, God. Let me double check it here so I don't mess up. Oh, they don't have the date on the main part of the article? You're kidding me. How is that even possible? Let me click on the article here. I'm sure it has the date. Come on. It's pouring outside, so I'm not surprised my internet is barely working. 1974.
Yeah, no, I wasn't around yet. That was definitely one of that was a rain delay video.
Yeah.
You remember those, remember?
Oh, yeah. I used
Back
to love
day,
those. That was the best part of the rain delay. Oh.
You know, I mean, you know, it's so different today, just the way TV and programming is. It's just different. You know, there's days where, yeah, I would like to go back to it, but I mean, you know, back in the 80s and 90s growing up for me watching, and I'm sure just for you, same thing. When there was a rain delay on, there was no regularly scheduled programming. So, you know, for me as a Cubs fan, we had Harry, you know, coming to the Steve Stone era. You had Steve Stone for, you know, 2-3 hours, depending on how long it was. And, you know, maybe they didn't broadcast it all the time, but then you'd get, you know, you always got the Hank Aaron. There was always the George Brett incident, which the only thing that kills me about the George Brett incident is they never really brought up the fact that that game was continued.
Yeah.
You know, like the next day or whatever. So, you know, that was always one of the cool things is you got to see all the old stuff, you know, stuff that maybe you just obviously because in our markets, we were very centralized, so you didn't get to see Atlanta, KC, you know, much of the Yankees or anything like that. I don't even know if ESPN was doing that kind of stuff or when they even started. So, you know, as a Cubs fan or White Sox fan, you know, and for myself, actually I didn't see White Sox games, oddly. You know, and I know we touched on that before, Big Jack. You know, I've said it a million times. You know, I grew up, my dad worked during the day or during the night. My mom worked during the day. So during the daytime, my dad was sleeping and, you know, kids who were watching themselves. I was, you know, my Channel 9 was preempted. Baseball was preempted. So I got the Cubs games during the day when my dad slept. You know, got to go play outside. And by the time it was after dinner, I was sitting in front of the TV watching Mets or Braves games because we got WJ whatever from New York, and then the TBS superstation. So, you know, I think as a kid, being able to watch what would could have been a huge dynasty with the Braves during the 90s was just, you know, it was the kind of the best time, especially when your Cubs weren't winning. And oddly, you could kind of elaborate on this again. I never, as a kid, saw a White Sox game on TV.
Yeah, well, see, I actually did see White Sox games. We used to have, and now this is going way back. I mean, there's people listening to us who are going to have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about. We used to have rabbit ears on top of the television, and the White Sox used to be on channel 44. So you would have to adjust the rabbit ears just right and get the channel correct to see the White Sox games. And, you know, now my setup was a little like yours. My dad worked first shift. My mom worked second shift. So I would always have a parent there with me in case something happened. And we had my grandfather living with us who had had a couple strokes and needed somebody there with him. So there was always somebody there. But, you know, at night my dad would fiddle around with those rabbit ears, get them just right, and we could watch White Sox baseball, but you couldn't touch anything. You couldn't touch the TV. You couldn't touch the rabbit ears. Otherwise the picture went out and you had to start all over again. So it took a long time for the White Sox to find a mainstream media channel. You know, like when we finally got cable, you know, then that's when Sports Channel came along and the White Sox moved over there and we were able to see the games much more easier. But, you know, then we got, you know, I had the White Sox, the Cubs, the Braves, and we got Brewer games because we got that WTMJ or whatever the Brewers were on for a little while. So, yeah, that was kind of the extra exposure I got, or, you know, the other way of finding out or seeing these other teams instead of just going through the sports section and reading and looking at the box scores and stuff. But, yeah, that's how I actually got to see White Sox games. If you go that far back, and luckily we were one of the first people in my neighborhood to get cable, so that made me even more popular as a, you know, a little fat kid with glasses. Everybody wanted to come to my house, even though we didn't have any pay stations. But we had a better picture and more options, so everybody was excited about that, and I had lots of friends then. Unlike now, where Dan is my only friend. So, but yeah, so that's how I got it rolling, you know. But I do, you know, I hate to do this on air to you, Dan, but I'm thinking this is you. I found this article. There was a Heritage Auctions in Dallas had an item up for bid that sold for a little over $1 million, $1,025,000, but the buyer is unknown. And this is a Lou Gehrig bank that dates back to 1922. And I'm thinking this was you and you just didn't release your name. So what are you going to do with this bat? Is it going in your man cave in the basement? Or are you going to hang on to it for a few years and try to sell it again?
I'm going to try to sell it for $1.5
million.
No, I wish I had that kind of money.
You know, well, I figured you know, maybe your wife got it for you or something. Or, oh, no, she's busy spending it on booty dispensing items and stuff, so you probably wouldn't be able to do that. But, yeah, I guess originally the item was marked at $950,000 and didn't go in the auction. But after the auction, a private buyer contacted the auction house. The gentleman for the auction house, the director, is Chris Ivey, and he mentioned that it was sold for $1,025,000. You know, yeah, it's an original 1922 bat, and apparently – they don't show it in the photo, but it appears that it's confirmed that this is the bat that Gehrig liked, and he sent it back to the maker because he wanted all his bats made just like this one. So it's a pretty significant bat. You know, just one of those funky things that sadly I don't have the money to buy, otherwise I probably would have. because I'm a schmuck like that. So, but yeah, I'm trying to see. There's some other things here. Like there was a Babe Ruth bat that he hit his first home run in Yankee Stadium that sold for $1.3 million. A game-worn Garrett jersey went for $870,000. And then they sold a combination of four Garrett jerseys from 1937, two he used on the road, two he used at home, for $2.58 million. So, yeah, it's a, you know, if you have baseball memorabilia out there that, you know, you can kind of document is what it is, you can rake in some cash, Dan. You got anything hiding in a closet you can sell?
No, the only thing I have is a Lou Gehrig Babe Ruth picture. It has the MLB logo sticker on it, so it is authentic, but it wasn't signed. But I did put it in a really expensive frame, which I got for free. I got all that for free.
Wow. So.
Yeah, no, the extent of my collectibles are, I grew up in the 80s, 90s, so basically anyone who's looking for baseball cards wants nothing that I have unless, you know, you have anything pre-50s. From what I understand,
yeah.
You know, even the late 70s, the 70s through now, you know, is just, it's so common. It's so common that, you know, you can pick it up anywhere. So much to the fact that, you know, as a kid, the one card I wanted my entire life was the Ricky Henderson rookie card. And I mean, I'm sure you had a store. We had a store in the mall by us, and, you know, it was the one store I went into every single time. And I think that card was, you know, $50, $100 or more back then. And, you know, I never got it. My dad did get me his second year card once because it was cheaper. Came with a commemorative silver coin, so that was pretty cool. Still have that. I don't have it on display yet because my area is not set in the basement yet. But, yeah, it wasn't until, sometime when we were doing this podcast that I ended up getting my Ricky Henderson rookie card because it was down to, like, $10 or $20, you know?
Oh, well, so you could have just asked me. We could have went through my stuff. I have multiple Ricky Henderson rookie cards. One of the boxes that you saw in my closet. So I don't know how long it would take us to find it, but
you'd be surprised too, because I actually have a Barry Bonds rookie card that I got for like next to nothing. But, you know, it was under $10. I don't remember what it was. It was cheap, and I mean, this thing is graded and everything. You know, and that's something I guess we can waste some time on if we're trying to fill in sports talk. You know, I know you've got tons of baseball cards, and I don't know if you've ever looked into getting anything graded, but, I mean, the cost to have your cards graded, I mean, just makes no sense. And I think, and I'm wondering if maybe that's what kind of killed the baseball card collecting. You know, because, I mean, to send, there's only, like, you know, what, there's like three, there's what, three or four, and there's only one or two that everyone really trusts. And I mean, you have to send the cards there, then they have to look through them to approve them, and then you have to pay to have them shipped there and shipped back. And you know, let's just, I don't even know what a set of cards weighs, you know, like a regular set for the season. But can you imagine sending a box of like 1,000 cards? What would that even cost? And to have it shipped.
Well, you know, I mean, think about it. You just gave me some of your old cards the last time you were here. Was that, I think it was last year. And that box was probably, what, 20, 25 pounds?
Yeah, it was
heavy. Could you imagine having to send that both ways and pay? You know, now you've seen the numerous boxes of collectible cards I have. Unfortunately, the boxes might be worth a little bit more than the cards are right now. Yeah, just imagine the price tag I would pay to try to have those cards graded.
Yeah, well, and you think about this. You send 25 pounds there, and then they grade each and every single one. And let's just say they're all you know, the top name players. You know, we're not just talking regular commons, because in one box you have, I did find like 37 cards of the same guy that I've never heard of. But that's why I got tired of looking through it. But, you know, if you can imagine, let's just say it's all Ricky Henderson's and Derek Jeter's and Hank Aaron, you know, all the big names like that. And then you spend £20, £25. Well, now you're going to get them all back in a case. So now we've added a little bit more weight, you know, so now this package gets even bigger, and it might not even be one box. It might be like, you know, three. I don't know. It's just, I think that kind of killed the industry a little bit. You know, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's cool to have it graded. But, you know, the Ricky Henderson I have is either an 8, and I've seen some 10s, and I'm like, well, I don't even see a difference between the card I have and the 10.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm sure, you know, there's cards that I've kept since when I was a kid that I'm sure are just complete garbage. But, you know, I've hung on to them for so long that they're just still, you know, in the collection. And I know one of my things, I worked at in Cary, Illinois for a while, just part-time, because I basically just spent the money on cards. I never really got a paycheck. I just, hey, I'll take this. And I spent one summer tracking down a complete set of Bowman gold cards, because it was the hot thing and everybody had to have them. And there was one card missing, and everybody was looking for this card. It turned out it ended up being a misprint by the company, and they never printed that number. So everybody spent all summer buying packs and buying cards and chasing down other guys, and the card didn't exist. So I have a complete set of these cards that at one point were worth, I think the highest I sought for a complete set in mint condition was $700.
Wow.
And now, if it's worth $7, you're probably lucky.
Really?
So yeah, just the way things have changed with the you know, baseball card collecting, or, you know, any card collecting. I know I see now a lot of people are interested in the unopened packs, which I actually do have some. I have some boxes of unopened packs. I don't remember what year it is. I have some minor league unopens, and then I have some Tops unopened, which are probably worth more than anything else I own right now.
Well, and you know what's amazing to me, though, is the fact that you can still go on eBay today, and hell, even the Facebook Marketplace, and I see people, I don't know what it is about the 85 season series, but that 1985 Tops, they just have, you know, unlimited. It seems like I've seen so many of those boxes unopened for sale.
So yeah, and you know, I mean, it, you know, at one time, I mean, it was a hot thing to do. You know, get out, you know, collect cards, you know, trade with, you know, we used to trade all the time as kids, you know, give you these guys for that guys, or, you know, however else it is. But, you know, now I know occasionally I'll see them in the store for sale, but I don't think I see too many people like buying them. You know, I mean, I don't even buy them anymore, but maybe I should start. I should start picking them up again just for the heck of it, right?
I did try. I worked at a gas station in, like, 98, 99. And I started, you know, looking at them, but I picked up a bunch of them and then just never really followed through with it. I think what made it hard, too, is the fact that, you know, it was Topps, Bowman, but then all of a sudden Topps, Bowman, Flair, and Donruss all started making, you know, subsidiaries. You know, you had your Flair Ultra,
yeah.
You had Upper Deck. You had Upper Deck that came along, which were cool, but then you had Upper Deck this, Upper Deck Vet.
Yeah, they got a tad carried away when it was popular.
Go on, Stock.
So, you know, like anybody else, I guess, you know, they were trying to take advantage of a situation, you know, just kind of like, oh, okay, you know, let's get people to spend more money. And, you know, when it was popular, it worked. But, you know, eventually, like everything else, you know, it ran the gambit, and it was an oversaturated market. Like you mentioned, the 85, you know, stuff, that's when it was kind of at its peak. You know, collecting cards was at its peak. So, you know, everybody had them or wanted them or was buying them. And, you know, it was just kind of like, okay, great. Well, everybody's got this. You know, what do I need it for? But, you know, I figure the way it's going now, you know, the longer I keep them, you know, maybe by the time I need to get rid of them or want to get rid of them, they'll actually, you know, they'll be old enough to have some value.
Yeah. I mean, I've got tons just sitting in the basement doing nothing.
So, yeah, I mean, I really, in reality, I need to sit down, you know, one of these weeks I'm on vacation and just go through them all and actually kind of decide what's good and what can kind of hit the road. But, you know, it's just, it's a big undertaking, and I don't know if I actually have the energy to do that. I might have to take multiple weeks off to get that done. Too bad I'm not quarantined. I could have possibly gotten it done now, but I'm sort of kind of essential, depending on who you talk to. So, I did find out, Dan, I don't know if you heard this, but apparently I'm not essential enough for the government to give me hazard pay, but I'm essential enough to do other things.
Well, you got your badge, so step one, right?
Yeah. I got my badge, and I got a letter from the government that says I can drive. You know, if I get pulled over, I can show it to say that I can actually be out. So, you know, just in case, not that, you know, I'm you know, going to get pulled over for anything because I live literally 5 minutes from where I work. So,
yeah, well, I mean, if I wasn't working right now, I was actually through a group I'm part of, through my village, the town I live in, we were extended the option to get paid to patrol the businesses overnight to basically assist the police and just having a presence. You weren't giving a uni or handcuffs or anything like that, but you know, if you drove past the you know, the stores that are closed and you've seen some activity, you just call the police department. And it was from like 1 or 2 in the morning till 5, I think. So you could be an arc. Yeah, pretty much. But you know, the group I'm part of is a big, large group, and there's a lot of people who don't work in it because they're old. So before I even had the opportunity to respond, they all. Yeah, exactly. But we weren't allowed to share this with the public, so to speak.
You can't. You didn't get to shoot people, so.
Yeah.
Which is always difficult, but, you know, because there are people who need to be shot.
Yeah, well, you know, I've waiting for that community police thing where you can go shoot a gun with them. But, because, you know, you would think, I mentioned it to my brother-in-law, the cop, a million times. Yeah, we should go. Especially when I lived by my old house because we were 5 minutes from a gun range, or whatever, shooting range. And he's like, yeah, I got an AR, I got this, I got that, we should go. And then, but then he's always working because he's a cop, so.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately that happens.
Yeah. Then my cousin's like, oh, no, I'll take you. And then he goes, I'm like, well, when are we going? Oh, I don't have a gun anymore. He quit the army. He got rid of his weapons. Go figure.
Well, that might be a good thing.
Yeah. But no, like you, I'm hoping one day the baseball cards I have are worth something, but, you know, it's one of those things where I've got, the sad part is back in the 90s, I lost half my collection in a flood at our house. So
no.
I've got a box of Topps cards that my parents kept. I'm like, they're garbage. No, they're not. They're fine. I'm like, there's a stack in there of like 50 cards that are all stuck together. So I don't know. I may use them for some kind of craft type deal. But, you know, the other half, you brought up the Bowman Gold. The one year I got a set for my parents for Christmas, and I broke the cardinal rule, don't open it. I loved opening them. It was a point, you know. And inside there was the Topps Black Gold card. So I sent that in the mail, and I got the Topps Black Gold card set for free.
Oh.
I was one of like, you know, it's like the only time I won anything.
Yeah, I actually saved up enough. I forgot what you had to save up to get it, but I have a Ken Griffey Jr. gold card. I don't remember what the gold is. I mean, obviously, it's probably just cheap, you know, whatever. But, yeah, it's the card basically in gold plating or whatever. And I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, but, I'm sure it's, nothing special. But, it's Ken Griffey Jr., and, I like Ken Griffey Jr., so there you go.
Yeah.
But, yeah, one of these days I'll figure out something to do with these damn things and, like I said, hopefully someday there's something out there that they're worth and I can do something. We'll see. Maybe I'll have to, when the season starts, maybe I'll have to actually look and see if there's still, if they're still sold around me. Like I can't, do they even exist anymore? Are there card shops where they, because I know like the one, a lot of them ended up being like card and comic shops, but the comic books really took over. So yeah, I don't know. Do they do cards anymore?
We had one store that was, they had like five different locations. One of them was actually 5 minutes from where I live now. The other one was about 20 minutes from my old house. But I mean, it was dead. It's one of those where you walk in and there's nobody in there, and the prices that they charge you to try to sell your stuff, they don't do things on consignment. You have to rent space in a case and hope your stuff sells. So, I went there once and just went through all the Ricky Henderson cards and just picked out, a handful that I didn't have. I don't think I spent more than $5-$10. So they're pretty non-existent now.
So yeah, I can't think of the last one I saw like in, in my area or anything like that. I mean, I know sadly it's not what it used to be with everything, but I guess what it is. Thank you very much for joining us. That's appreciated. But if you just want to get here on time, just head over to the podcast. You can listen to the podcast whenever you want.